Let's see.
Here we go.
All right. Can we take another quick moment of silence here so that I can get out of the way? I'm an addict. My name's Matt.
Hey, Matt.
And I want to thank you for asking me to share today. I remember a time a few years ago when the fear of doing this was so great that I would have done almost anything to avoid being in this situation. And, the first time that I was asked to speak at a meeting.
And it's right,
sir. Thank you.
I said,
I'm trying to mute you.
I just had to.
You gotta mute your. There you go.
Yep.
All right, here we go. I had always heard that, people share in meetings that, that you should work the fourth step before you're a speaker at a meeting. I don't know when that rule was started or if that's a real thing. But I use any excuse that I could to get out of speaking in front of people. And, so that first time I got asked to speak, I said no. And then, the second time I got asked to speak, I said yes, because I had learned at that point to say yes to Narcotics Anonymous. And, but that I was asked to speak, and I had about two months until the day that I was supposed to speak, and I obsessed over it every single day. I drove myself crazy trying to think about what I was going to share, and then when I got up there, nothing that I had planned came out. So, I'm going to start by, I'm not going to get into war stories, but I'm going to just kind of share a little bit about how I found Narcotics Anonymous. About 7 or 8 years ago, I found myself, completely hopeless. My addiction had brought me to a point of, being unemployable, being evicted from my apartment. I was completely isolated from my family. The last year that I used, I didn't go to my family's Christmas get together that I go to every year, and I actually slept through Christmas, and I got to a point where every day that I woke up, if I slept, the worst things that I could imagine were happening. All of my worst nightmares were coming true. I felt like the walls were closing in on me, and I really felt like it was the end of my life. like my life is going to end soon. And, you know, so Narcotics Anonymous is really special to me because at that time of complete desperation, when I thought it was all over, I found myself at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting and found hope. You know, at the end of my using, you know, I agreed to, my family did like kind of like an intervention type thing on me. And, you know, they got me to agree to go to this rehab. And, you know, I had to leave, you know, my girlfriend behind and go by myself, which was a huge fear for me. You know, there's a lot of things that have happened, you know, throughout my time, in Narcotics Anonymous, where I felt like something was carrying me through. And I still feel like that, a lot of times, like when I look back, I'm thinking about of me coming into NA a lot lately, and when I look back at it, it's, you know, I really think about, like, I can't believe that I made that decision or that I did these things, and that I, you know, sometimes even today, I'm just like, I can't believe I'm clean. You know, I can't believe that, that I'm still here. And I, you know, I really feel like there was something carrying me through at that point, because I made a decision that was impossible for me to make, you know, for me to leave, my girlfriend, you know, who was, you know, in active use, and go to this rehab, you know, that's just not a decision that I would make. But I also didn't really have a whole lot of options at that point. You know, things had gotten really bad and I needed, you know, it was kind of my only play left, you know, because I was facing homelessness. And, you know, it's not that I wouldn't have done that, but, you know, at that point I felt like, you know, this was my best shot at, you know, moving forward. And, and so anyways, I went to this treatment center and, you know, I remember, you know, laying in bed, like one of the first nights that I was there, and the thought of never using again brought me so much fear and discomfort that I could not even imagine not using again. There was always a but then, you know, I might be able to use, I might be able to, you know, have a drink, I can go on with my life. There's always this idea that, you know, I could stop, get my stuff under control and then go about my life, and be like a normal person. And, you know, I remember, about, I think I was at this place for about 7 days. And I found out that my girlfriend had overdosed and was on life support. And this is like another one of those moments that I feel like something was carrying me through, because somehow I stayed and I didn't quit. You know, I realized at this point how serious this disease was. And, you know, I was uncertain. We were uncertain on what was going to happen with her, whether she was going to live or not. And, you know, I remember, you know, within a few days of that, you know, there was a people from Narcotics Anonymous that came into that rehab facility and did a like a meeting type thing, and I got one of the like little white books and I think an IP, and I remember you know, I really related with what I was hearing from them. And, you know, I knew a little bit about, well, I didn't really know anything about recovery or NA. All I knew was that my dad went to meetings and I resented the meetings, and I resented the people at the meetings because the way I looked at it was, you know, they took my dad. My dad had all this time for people at these meetings. It didn't have time for me. And, you know, I had no idea, you know, what this was. But, you know, I remember shortly after that, I got a basic text. And, you know, I would read that book in bed at night. And, you know, for the first time, it was like I was reading, things that I identified with on such a deep level that, you know, it felt like somebody actually knew, you know, that my inner thoughts and feelings. And, you know, at that point, I knew that Narcotics Anonymous was my path to recovery. And, you know, so I planned for that. You know, when I got out of that rehab, I knew that I was going to Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, part of, you know, my story is that, you know, when I went to this rehab, I got a lot of misinformation. Our basic text talks about most of our, you know, before coming to NA, most of our ideas about, you know, addiction came from misinformed people. And, you know, I had a therapist when I was there. I was diagnosed with a mental health disorder that they told me that I would have to be on medication for the rest of my life, and that I would always have to work on my mental health and my recovery separately. And, you know, so I came out of rehab with that thinking, you know. And I was looked at these professionals, like they knew what they were talking about. And, you know, and me as an addict, you know, if you told me that, you know, I needed a prescription, I was all about that. You know, it's like, yes, that makes sense. That's why I'm this way. You know, because I have this disorder that I have no control over. You know, it gave me an excuse for my behavior, for my thinking, you know, so I ran with that. You know, I remember, you know, about a couple weeks out of rehab, you know, I remember going to this meeting where I was riding my bike a lot at the time and walking because I didn't have a license for the first 3 years that I was in NA. And I remember I went to the grocery store, to the pharmacy, and got my prescription filled, took it, and then I went to the meeting. And I sat down at the table, and the reading card for what is the Narcotics Anonymous program was in front of me. And I did the reading at the beginning of the meeting, for the first time, when I read the words, "This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs," you know, something in my gut, you know, just told me that I was Houston. And then also at that meeting, I remember, you know, in How It Works, where it talks about, you know, that we have to abstain from all drugs in order to recover. You know, little things from the literature just started seeping in. Unfortunately, I didn't really hear that message coming from, you know, the addict sharing in the meeting. You know, I heard a lot of stuff. I didn't really hear a whole lot of the Narcotics Anonymous message at the meetings I was going to early on. And, you know, so, you know, I remember at that point, like I decided that I wasn't going to take medication. And, you know, so I was really, you know, because I knew that I was trying to change how I felt, you know, because I didn't like how I felt. Not being on drugs sucked, you know, in the beginning. And, you know, so I started doing what, you know, what I was told to do at meetings. And I, you know, I got a sponsor. I was working the steps, and I was going to meetings. You know, that's really all I was doing, was, you know, going to meetings, answering questions out of this step guide, and talking to a sponsor here and there. And, I remember getting the suggestion to do 90 meetings, 90 days. I did that. You know, I did 92 days. And then I didn't go to a meeting one day, and I used on that day. And, you know, I learned a lot about my disease from this experience. You know, I was going to this convenience mart, and I ran into one of the guys I used with. And just seeing this person, something happened inside my head. You know, I decided to use. And, you know, it was just like an automatic thing. And, you know, I used for 3 days, didn't sleep at all for those 3 days. And I had signed up to chair the Sunday meeting. And, you know, it was Saturday night. Late Saturday night, and all of a sudden, you know, reality started to kick in. Oh no, I have to chair the meeting on Sunday. It was also Father's Day, and my dad, who was a big part of helping me, you know, find recovery, was a member of the home group. And so all of this stuff was building up, and, you know, I had to, it was too much for me to handle. And I, you know, I got to a deeper place than I had ever even been, when I was using before. In 3 days time, I was worse off than I was before I went to rehab. And I really was considering suicide. I wanted to disappear. You know, I couldn't face it. I was cursing the fact that I had ever gone to meetings, had ever gotten involved with this stuff, because now, you know, it was getting in the way of, you know, me destroying myself. And I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden, you know, the meeting had already started at this point, and I had this almost like a peace come over me, and I decided to go to the meeting.
And, you know, I had to walk. It probably would have taken like 20 minutes to a half hour to get to this meeting. So I showed up late. And for the first time, I got honest. You know, I told on myself, which was something that, you know, I was not accustomed to doing. And, you know, for the first time that day, I wanted to be clean. You know, up until that point, I was really just looking for the absence of pain. You know, I was looking to improve my living situation because things had gotten so bad. And that day, for the very first time, I remember saying after that meeting, you know, I really wish I was clean right now. And, you know, so after that, I stayed clean for, it was about 18 months, of total abstinence, not using anything. And, I had gotten a different sponsor. The first sponsor I had kind of, did multiple fellowships, and, you know, I was looking for an NA sponsor at this point. And, you know, I found a sponsor. You know, I was doing, you know, what I was supposed to be doing again. I was going to meetings. I was answering questions out of the step guide. And, you know, I was talking with my sponsor like once a week or so. And, at around 18 months, I really just kind of hit a wall. You know, I was on the fourth step in this guide, and, you know, I got, you know, all the depression, anxiety, all that stuff came back really hard. And, you know, I remember at that time, you know, the people that I was hanging out with, they told me, you know, you've done things the right way. Like, you've been clean for over a year now, you're working the steps, all this stuff. If you're feeling like this, you know, maybe there's something wrong with you. Maybe you need to go see a doctor. And I did. I went to a doctor. I was there in this doctor's office talking to her for 5 minutes. And I left with a prescription. And I knew, you know, I knew deep down, you know, that I was looking for something to change how I felt. Because I couldn't just be me. I couldn't face life without drugs. And I took this prescription, and I was altered. You know, I took it for 3 days until I started acting really crazy, and decided not to take it anymore. And you know, I had woken up, you know, my addiction again. And and you know, my girlfriend, you know, she was actually coming to meetings now. She did, you know, she did live through the overdose, and you know, we were expecting a baby. And you know, part of you know, why I think I was going through this was, you know, the fear of being a father. The fear of bringing another life into this world, because of, you know, the way that I grew up and the way that, you know, the way that my life was, you know, it just brought up so much fear in me that I wasn't able to face. And I just defaulted back to, you know, that, looking for comfort. And, you know, so my girlfriend ended up having to have a emergency C-section, and which we weren't prepared for. All of a sudden there was just drugs. Drugs going in her body, and then prescriptions. And I remember, we just did what the doctor said. And I remember her prescription was in our house, after we came home, for 20 minutes before I took one. And that was the end of my relapse at this point. The relapse started for me when I took drugs, from the doctor, and then it ended with this one pill. And I took that one, and it was automatic. It was an impulse. It was my body doing something that, it was like I was watching myself do it, and I was like, I can't believe this is happening right now. And then I remember I walked by that pill bottle, I don't even know how many times a day, wanting to take another one. And something prevented me from not taking another one. And I argued with myself for like 4 days about whether that was a relapse or not. Like that's how insane my thinking can be. I had used drugs and I was still questioning whether I relapsed or not. My instinct was to not tell anyone. And, once again, this relapse was the one that really brought me to my knees, because I didn't have any external consequences. I hadn't lost anything physical. I still had my girlfriend. We now had a baby. I didn't get in trouble. It wasn't like, the other times where it was like I lost everything. But inside, I, was at a bottom that I had never been to. And I was completely desperate. The sponsor that I had at the time had me, when I called him, I explained the situation to him, hoping he would tell me that I didn't relapse. but that wasn't the case. He was like, yep, that's a relapse. And he goes, let me ask you a question. He's like, are you going to the meeting? And at that point, I had stopped going to meetings regularly. And I was resistant to going to the meeting. I was like, I got to go to the meeting. And it's like, yeah, you need to go, get a white key tag. And I remember I went to this little meeting that, I don't think that any of the people that were there were actually clean. And I had to get honest again, just like that first time. And, I remember the 60 days or so after that were really hard for me. I was going to meetings where they did the clean time countdown at every meeting. And, so every meeting I had to get up and, show that I had 30 days or less. And, I was starting all over again. And I was so frustrated and really just ready to give up. But, that the desperation, that I felt, kept me coming to the meetings. And, You know, so I stayed with that sponsor for, I want to say, 6 months. And, you know, I worked back through the first three steps, and I was on step four again. You know, I finished the fourth step and the guide that we were using. And I remember meeting with him to go over it and trying to go over, you know, what I had written. And I remember him asking me, like, you know, after we had gone over it, if there was anything else that I wanted to talk to him about. And there was stuff that I, like, left off the, you know, that I skipped over when we were talking about it. And I could not, as hard as I tried, bring myself to talk to him about it. And I understand today that's because I wasn't ready for the fourth step. You know, I didn't have that trusting relationship with God or with a sponsor to be able to fearlessly, you know, go over my inventory. And at that point, you know, when I realized that I couldn't get honest with this guy, I knew that I needed to do something. You know, I needed to find a way to recover. And, you know, I really felt that desperation all over again. Like, nothing was working for me. And, you know, this was, I think it was like 2019, maybe beginning of 2020 when COVID first started happening. You know, I remember, you know, an addict that I was friends with went to this 12-step retreat in Columbiana, Ohio, and he met all these addicts that, you know, were into the gray book and were, you know, going or, you know, like, had historical literature study meetings. And, you know, we started, you know, reading the book, and, you know, I had found like a podcast that had, you know, stuff about NA history on it. And, you know, I was really looking for things to, like, get me involved and try to learn. Because I knew I needed to stay here, and I needed to, you know, I needed to get interested in Narcotics Anonymous. And so at that time, you know, I found out through a message board that I was invited to that there was this Skype meeting, and I went to the store to buy a webcam because my computer didn't have a webcam at the time. And there was one left. And, you know, I had no idea, but all the webcams were sold out because teachers were starting to have to teach from home because of COVID. And, you know, so I looked out, I got this one webcam, and I started going to this Skype meeting. Where they read the gray book, and there were addicts. There was an addict that's actually in this meeting tonight that was there at that first meeting I went to reading the gray book. And you know, something just started opening up for me. Like, I related to the book. I related to the addicts that were sharing honestly. From, you know, what we were reading. And, you know, and then our group that we had started had to briefly do online meetings because our meeting facility closed. And, you know, at that time there were like tons of addicts joining these meetings. And, you know, I met my current sponsor at that time. We started talking, and there's something about how, like when we're ready in this program, the right people show up in our lives at the right time, that can guide us. And, you know, I started talking to this addict, and, you know, immediately, we had a lot to talk about, and, you know, I knew that I needed a new sponsor, and that, you know, I wanted to be, guided by somebody that was living the Narcotics Anonymous way, the way that's laid out in the basic text. And, you know, so I ended up asking this addict to sponsor me, and, you know, the first thing, you know, that he really had me do was, tell my other sponsor. And for me, that was one of those things that's like, I never wanted to deal with. I never wanted to, you know, I don't think I ever actually broke up with somebody in my life. And, you know, they always say, like, you know, that getting a new sponsor it's not supposed to be like a breakup, but it always is. And, you know, so I had to go through the uncomfortability of explaining to this guy, you know, like that I was getting a different sponsor. And it was hard for me. And, you know, but it was absolutely necessary. You know, I had to start doing the right things for the right reasons. And, you know, so through this new sponsor, you know, I was introduced to the five tools of recovery. It's a great IP written by Addicts for Addicts. And, you know, he had me go over some questions, at the beginning of the step writing guide, you know, basically just laying the groundwork for the response or the sponsorship relationship. And, you know, one of the first things he told me was that, you know, that I needed to call him every day. And, you know, not only did he want me to call, but he expected me to call. You know, and I needed that. You know, I needed that to start building a relationship with a sponsor. You know, like the one I had before, like I said, it was kind of a, you know, call me if you need me type relationship. And, you know, I would call once a week. And, you know, we never really got to know each other, you know? And so, of course, when it came time to go over the fourth step, you know, I didn't trust, you know, because we didn't really have much of a relationship. So, you know, I started calling my sponsor daily. He had me start writing daily, praying. He made sure I was going to daily meetings and that I was, calling, you know, several other addicts that are in this process of recovery on a daily basis. And, you know, as desperate as I was, you know, I had a little bit of willingness to do, you know, whatever was suggested to me, but there was still a lot of resistance. You know, and I had to surrender, you know, what I wanted to do, for what I needed to do, to recover. And I knew that, you know, so slowly I started taking the suggestions. I started doing what I was supposed to do. And, you know, and I remember, he told me to write daily. You know, I started writing on the first step inventory on a daily basis, and he told me to let him know, when I had a spiritual awakening as a result of the step. I also had to send my writing to him every day. So when I first started out, it was like real superficial, really, it's like I was trying to sound good. I wanted to make sure that, I was doing it right. Almost like trying to impress him, like in the fourth step, it talks about being careful not to have any, person in mind, when writing our inventory, because, we can slant, what we're going to write. And, so I had to learn how to write like nobody was reading it, like it was just for me. But this act of doing the writing, sending it to my sponsor who was reading it, and then talking to my sponsor on a daily basis helped me build a trusting relationship over time. All the tools are so important together. But there was something about like honesty where I could, I might have this like honesty inside me. But then, be scared to talk about it with another person, or being scared to expose it. And, but I was able to, muster up the courage to write it down and then send it. And then there was something about being able to do that helped me open up, that helped me become more honest. And it was like, I didn't have to do it all at once. It was like a kind of like a soft progression of being able to write it and then send it to my sponsor and then eventually talk about it with my sponsor. And I remember there was a lot of fear, and I held a lot of things back, early on in my first step. And, one of those things was that, having come to understand that this is a program of complete and total abstinence, I hid the fact that my girlfriend was on all these medications and, not that he was sponsoring her, but there was, I had fear about, about what was going on, because, I wanted her to recover. But I was also scared of, exposing this fact because I was scared to lose my relationship. And, the program has a way, and God has a way of, making things happen in this program, to bring about recovery. And I know, for me, I had to get to a point where I was trying to control the situation so much, and I was so obsessed with it, that I had to just let it go. I had to turn it over and, allow God to work. And, something happened, around that time, that really shook, my relationship. And, it was potentially going to be over. And somehow, God God used this situation to get my girlfriend clean. And, you know, and I was able to get honest with my sponsor. I was able to, you know, have that freedom from, you know, holding on to this thing so tight. And, you know, that only honesty can bring about. And you know, I had to get to that point where it says that, you know, it says in the very beginning of the second step that the first step left a vacuum in our lives. And that, you know, this void forces us to seek a power greater than ourselves to help restore us. And I had to get to that point clean, you know, without using drugs. I had to see my disease for what it was. You know, with my own experience. And, you know, I remember around that time, like, you know, I felt like I had used my disease was so active. But I didn't have the desire to use drugs, you know, and that was a big part of the first step for me. And also, you know, it says in the first step, in the basic text, that there's two parts to the first step. You know, yes, on one hand, I'm powerless over my addiction and my life is unmanageable. But then on the other hand, you know, once I get my life together, I can use it again. You know, that goes back to me, for, you know, that laying in that that bed in a rehab and trying to imagine my life, living life without drugs, and how I had gotten to this point now, you know, in the first step where I knew drugs weren't the solution anymore. And, you know, since that point, you know, that second part hasn't been an issue for me. You know, I want to live life without drugs today, because I know that there's no solution there. You know, one of the big hang-ups that I had coming into the program was the word God. And, you know, when I went to meetings and I was reading the 12 steps that were hanging on the wall, and I saw the word God, you know, I couldn't see past it. Because, you know, all I could think about was, you know, my experiences growing up, you know, going to different churches and dealing with other, like, you know, all these different things, you know, and, you know, sometimes at meetings I would hear people talk about, like, their specific ideas about God. And, you know, I'm really grateful that, you know, the NA literature, like, you know, kind of, you know, talks about, you know, we talk about God in general terms here. And, you know, that gave me the freedom to come to an understanding of God for myself. You know, I had to be open-minded. You know, I'm really grateful for the second step because, you know, the second step, you know, basically told me, like, you don't need to worry about the third step yet where it says God. You know, you can become open-minded to a power greater than yourself that can help restore you sanity. And, you know, by this point, you know, I knew that something spiritual brought me to this program because, you know, enough had happened. I had seen enough evidence of, you know, things working out when they shouldn't, you know, of the coincidences that it talks about in the second step. And, you know, You know, so I was open-minded. I became open-minded to the word God, you know, through that second step. And, you know, then I just had to get over, you know, my prejudices and my misconceptions about God. Because I think one of the things that was misleading to me or that I misunderstood about our literature is that, you know, it kind of talks about, you know, a freedom to choose a God of our own understanding, or, you know, it can be whatever, you know. And for me, it became more about me getting my ideas out of the way and allowing God to present himself to me. And, you know, so turning my will and my life over, you know, involved me, you know, my sponsor had me pray and ask God to reveal himself to me. And then, you know, I did. God revealed himself to me. And then I had to accept that understanding that was being presented to me. You know, that was me surrendering my will to God's will. You know, if it's the other way around for me, you know, if I get to like create or make up a God of my own understanding, then that wouldn't be God to me. That would make me God. You know, so you know, what Narcotics Anonymous gave me was that freedom to be able to come to that understanding for myself. You know, I needed my own evidence. I needed my own experience to find this God. And, you know, I'm really grateful for that experience. You know, the first three steps, you know, have taken me a lot longer, you know, than they take, you know, your average person that comes into this program and starts working the steps. I had to get over that. You know, I had friends that were going through the 12 steps like three times. And, you know, and I had found a way, or was being guided in a way, that was a lot different. And, you know, today I understand that difference is huge, and it was absolutely needed for me. You know, I needed to actually, you know, live these steps, in order to get to a point where I could actually do a fearless and thorough moral inventory of myself. You know, what that did for me was, I'm wrapping up the fourth step right now. And, you know, I wrote about all the stuff that's in my fourth step on the first three steps, you know, so there has been no fear about writing my inventory and facing myself, because I had been doing it. You know, so I'm really grateful for where I'm at today. You know, this program has given me a life, you know, far beyond my expectations. You know, it can be easy to, you know, to see, you know, when we stop using drugs, our lives can improve. And, you know, that happens for a lot of people. It can be kind of misleading too, because, you know, it talks about in the basic text that, you know, social acceptability doesn't equal recovery, you know, and I have a lot of social acceptability today. You know, I have a job. I've had perfect attendance at this job for, going on 6 years now, which is an absolute miracle for an addict like me that couldn't be on time for anything, let alone show up. And, you know, that's a result of, you know, the benefits of being clean and, this program, you know, but that's not recovery. You know, being able to hold a job, you know, show up where I say I'm going to show up, all those types of things, you know, people start wanting to be back in our lives. You know, it's all part of recovery, but it's not truly what recovery is that I understand today. I'm really grateful, that I see the necessity, for living in this program and, you know, doing the steps and, facing ourselves, because without it, I would be a ticking time bomb. You know, I've seen addicts in, where I live. A couple of years ago, there were a few addicts with like 30 plus years that committed suicide. You know, I don't want to be one of those addicts today. I want to deal with my stuff, face it, and recover from the disease of addiction, so that I can better help others. And, I understand today that I need to do that in order to help. When it comes to working with other addicts, being part of a group and having to face things, a lot of, personalities come up, conflicts come up. My disease wants me to hide or not tell the truth, avoid things. And, recovery makes it possible to face these things, to communicate, to work through things, to find solutions, and to not, enable the disease of addiction in others. And in order for me to do that, I have to recover. So I have to recover in order to help others. And I have to help others in order to recover too. So, really grateful, that you guys asked me to speak today. That's all I got.
Thanks, Matt.